In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, May 18th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of our program today, you'll meet Gary Galloway of the State Department and Mary Souther of Indus. They'll be joining me to talk about the Management of Change Conference. 30 years of collaboration in the federal government. Collaboration has been a struggle for some agencies. There are some success stories to tell as well, and we will learn more about collaboration and IT stuff in general in government in hour number two of our program today. In hour number one, I'm pleased to welcome Dale Church, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering at the Defense Department under Harold Brown, and recipient of the rank of meritorious executive in the senior executive service, and also of the Defense Distinguished Service Medal from the Secretary of Defense for his service at DOD. Mr. Church, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Francis.
You are the also the author of a piece that caught my eye in National Defense, the magazine of NDIA. The headline of this piece is Acquisition Professionals Needed, but They Should Be Qualified. And I've had a number of conversations on this program over the last couple of months about acquisition reform at DOD. And you make a point, you crystallize, I think, very well what has been kind of the thread of some of the conversations that I've had. You write, during the last 40 years, various groups have convened study after study. Each of these studies offer useful suggestions of how to improve government acquisition, but what's been seriously lacking is a government cadre of properly educated and experienced business managers, financial experts, engineers, and scientists to provide the essential oversight. The studies that have taken place over the last however number of years, back to the 70s, I suppose, as you say, have all included elements that people that are experts like yourself believe are usable and workable. I'm curious to know, to start out, why you think it's been difficult for the Defense Department to tie all those pieces together, and why here we are, however many years you want to call it later, still having this conversation about how we fix this system.
It's a system that's been in place for a long time, and it's grown up with various bureaucracies and illities, as we call them, you know, ingraining themselves into the system, and to try to weed them out and get them to change is difficult at best. But the other problem we have is we have a lot of changes that go on in the system, both those that are mandated by Congress as well as those that are, you know, come about as a result of, you know, personnel changes and the like. So as a consequence, for example, with respect to the military, I think the average program manager longevity is something just short of 3 years, like, you know, 28 months, something along that order. So you get a program manager, takes him, you know, maybe a year and a half to really get up to speed on the job. He's got about a year to go before he's starting to thinking about where his next assignment is. So with respect to the military managers, you have a constant rotation. But even with respect to the upper-level civilian managers, you have a constant rotation as well, because with political changes that happen, administrations changing and whatnot, that, you know, typically the average longevity of the political appointees is no more than, again, about 2 to 3 years. So, again, they just begin to learn their jobs about the time that they rotate out.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really gets traction enough to really take on this encrusted bureaucracy whose very jobs may depend upon changes not being made, mm-hmm. rather than changes being made.
There have been a number of attempts at legislative reform. Senator Levin and Senator McCain's bill last year, the House Armed Services Committee just reported out a bill that will the House passed it, and it appears now it's going to languish in the Senate till who knows when. But there have been a number of attempts at legislative fixes to kind of mandate or dictate how these changes will take place, but they don't seem to have really taken much hold either. So it kind of has left some people, I think, feeling like, well, if legislation doesn't work and the people that are in place inside DOD aren't interested in changing the system, we're kind of stuck and this might not change.
That always, of course, is the danger here, is that, you know, we really don't address the problem properly. The key will be to get good people hired, trained, and into the system, and get them moving forward on it. The problem with the congressional approach to things is it's a typical political approach, which goes over the top in terms of oversight and other things that they think that more checks and balances is necessary. And all it tends to really do for the most part is gum up the works. It doesn't need more checks and balances. It starts with the fact that most of the concern is a result of overruns on major weapon systems. And virtually no major weapon system has come through the process without a major overrun. And this is both in terms of requirements creep as well as, typically underestimating, what it's going to cost in the first place. Everybody starts, both the contractors and the customers, with a great enthusiasm of we've got this new technology and we're going to be able to marry it to this particular problem. And it's, nice to be optimistic, but the problem is that that's the time really to sit down and say, all right, what is this truly going to cost? I used to say, if you take the existing technology, it'll give you about 90% of what you want, and that'll cost you X. If you want the extra 10%, which is pushing the state of the art, it's probably going to be more like 5X.
Mm-hmm.
So that last 10% costs a lot more money. So what the Congress sees is really that last 10%. We should be satisfied with going forward with the 90% to begin with and letting the technology mature and take its time to get up to then it can be block changed, that is, added to in blocks to the system as you go down the road and improve its performance. There's great danger that we try to do that all at the outset and we don't cost it in.
Mm-hmm.
So this creates this reaction. So now we have a reaction of more oversight, more ways to control costs. All we do is add a lot more people, looking at the wrong things. What they ought to be looking at is the beginning, not the end, and start really designing this thing. And that requires good people. I always say the key to success is not organizations, but really good people being unencumbered by organizations to do their job well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really was the key to the piece, was saying it's quality, not quantity, that we need in the system. Not more oversight, not necessarily more people in numbers qualitatively,
mm-hmm.
but qualitatively need more people.
Yeah.
The good news is I think the system is ripe for it in terms of what's available out there to do something. And maybe we could chat a little bit more about that, too.
I definitely want to talk about that. There are a couple thoughts there, though, that I'd like to tear into before we get there. One of them is the concept of requirements creep. About a little over a month ago, I had General Steve Boutell, who was the CIO at Army, and General Dick Myers, of course, former chair of the Joint Chiefs here. And that was one of the issues that we talked about that they both said from a uniform perspective is extremely frustrating. General Myers talked about the same kind of concept that you did, which he called, I believe, an 85% solution, which is let's make sure it at least does this and not get distracted by when the vendor comes back and says, but, we could also make it do this. This is also wonderful. And then people's natural tendency is to say, well, I want that, too. Any thoughts about how that can either be taught or maybe mandated or somehow woven into the system that the 85% solution becomes, or the 90% solution, whatever number we want to affix to it, becomes kind of the method of operation, the pretty much the standard operating procedure, rather than being distracted by all the bells and whistles?
Way to start, really, is to look at what is available out there commercially to start with, okay? What is the state of the art in what the world is using outside the military? And say, can we adapt that to our use? Because it already has been developed along considerable lines, as well as having a logistics chain and other things that the military must have to support it. And a good example is these tanker aircraft, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, that the competition now is two commercial airplanes,
mm-hmm.
The Boeing 767 and the Airbus. When I was in the Pentagon, we were looking for a new tanker. Back then, we had the old 707s, KC-135s, and we decided the DC-10, which was a commercial airplane. And so what it took was really knock-down, drag-out fights with the Air Force to keep them from changing the commercial airplane frame into a unique military thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a goal of 80% protecting the commercial of the KC-10.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be almost a weekly fight with the Air Force because they kept saying, well, but if we could have this, if we could have that. Yeah, but you already have what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that going on now with these new tankers, you know, 251 or whatever is line items and so on and so forth. You know, the fact is there's a lot out there and we don't need to buy something that's uniquely developed for the military.
Mm-hmm.
So you start with that. And that usually will give you close to your 85 or 90% we're talking about. Now you look around and say, all right, but there's some R&D work being done. Let's monitor that R&D work and see if that can indeed be ultimately applied to this particular thing down the road.
Dale Church is a former Undersecretary of Defense and my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, author of the piece Acquisition Professionals Needed, But They Should Be Qualified. And we're talking both about his piece in particular and his thoughts about the acquisition process at the Pentagon and how to approve it in general. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's Pablo Martinez, Special Agent in charge of Criminal Investigative Division, U.S. Secret Service on the 21st Century Cybersecurity Panel, sponsored by ArcSight.
I think the Secret Service supports any bills that would create a more robust workforce for the federal government. A lot of what some of these bills are trying to do are things that we've been doing in the past with several federally funded research and development centers where we're taking advantage of technologies that have been funded maybe by other federal agencies, and we're looking at the applicability of those technologies.
To listen to the whole program made possible by ArcSight, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
NATO, the Federal Reserve, World Bank, the Department of Treasury, what do they have in common? All turned to ArcSight to secure their critical information and operations. ArcSight identifies, assesses, and mitigates internal and external cyber threats. With the market-leading ArcSight SIEM platform, organizations can safeguard their assets, comply with regulatory policy, and control risks associated with cyber attacks. Learn more at ArcSight.com. ArcSight.com.
I'd say most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why if you're a federal employee, you could save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best services side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run. But I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece. A Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Dorabeck Insider. She was GSA's chief financial officer. Now she heads up GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy. And in her first interview, Kathleen Turco will tell us what OGP means for feds. And cybersecurity and embedded systems. Many people are focused on cyber attacks. We'll tell you what embedded systems are and how you can protect your agency. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dale Church is my guest in studio today, and we're talking about reforming the acquisition process. He is author of a piece in National Defense, which is now linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and I encourage you to go there and read what Mr. Church has written. The headline of this is, Acquisition Professionals Needed, But They Should Be Qualified. And the gist of your piece is what we talked about, one of the elements that we talked about in the first segment, Mr. Church, and that is the Pentagon has said they want to hire 20,000 people to do acquisition. There are a lot of questions about that number that we can explore. Where are they going to come from? What says that you're qualified as a particular, as a person who's applying for one of these 20,000 jobs? To do acquisition. And I think that's where I'd like to start with this qualitative concept, and step away as you do in the piece from the 20,000 number and get into what each of these individuals has to offer the Pentagon as a, and cause you've mentioned that the Pentagon has more to offer now than they have in the past compared to the private sector to the prospects, to the potential employees. What should the people inside the Pentagon who are looking for these people, what should they be looking for? What's on somebody's resume that would cause a hiring manager to say, this is somebody I need to look at?
We start with the premise that it takes about 5 to 7 years to really qualify somebody to be able to turn loose and really do, you know, acquisition, decision-making, you know, kinds of responsibilities. So we start with that. If we started today, that would mean it'd be somewhere between 2015 and 2017 before we would get these people trained and up to the level.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start with people that are coming, say, out of college now or, you know, or have worked maybe in the military for a period of time or whatever and are becoming civilians and we want to get them up to that, it's going to take about that kind of a lag time. And that assumes that we had schools and institutions that were available to train these people.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's about 150,000, give or take a few, in the system, which really would be called, you know, direct contact acquisition professionals. They're dealing with a base of about $1.6 trillion worth of acquired assets. So you can see it's the largest enterprise in the world. So now we've got to have some way to train these people. We have something called DAU, Defense Acquisition University.
Mm-hmm.
The throughput there is, oh, maybe 100 students at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to get to 20,000 that way.
Yeah.
So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to rely on a lot of your universities, for example, or another source would be people coming out of industry. Now, there is an attempt being made going from to insource from outsource. So some of these people are people that could be hired, you know, from industry who were heretofore insourced, or I should say outsourced to become insourced.
Mm-hmm.
Even there, though, it's going to take a transition period because it takes anywhere from 6 months to a year from the time that you start the application process till you're actually on the job.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, industry can kind of warehouse these kind of people waiting for security clearances and whatnot. They've got a place to put them. The government typically doesn't have such a place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could we have training institutions that we would put together? Nobody's really thought of this before.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly that's one idea, would be to have some kind of a way like industry does of warehousing people for a period of time until they get through this process. So if somebody's hired out of college, they've got, you know, tuition payments and this sort of thing and loans that they got to cover.
Right.
So they need money.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to put them in a place where they're making money at the time they're going through this initial training.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the source, would be People moving from industry as well as people moving from our schools.
Dale Church is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about reforming the defense acquisition process. We'll continue our conversation in just moments, and we'll tell you more about hour number two of the program in just a bit.
I'm Tom Busby, CNBC Radio. Stocks are lower this afternoon despite some good news about the economy. Right now, the Dow's down 53 points, the Nasdaq lower by 23. Inflation is in check. Wholesale producer prices down 0.1% in April. That's on a drop in energy and food prices. Home construction that same month surging, a better-than-expected 5.8% higher. That's thanks to the extension of home buyer tax credits. But permits for future building tanked. Walmart profits last quarter up 10%. Much of that growth was outside the U.S., but still the world's largest retailer made $3.3 billion. The United Nations Security Council, that includes China and Russia, agreeing on tough new sanctions against Iran due to their nuclear ambitions. BP says the cost of cleanup in the Gulf so far, $625 million. And the U.S. Treasury has a new plan for $20 billion in small business loans.
With most CDs, it's hard to know when to lock in your rate. But there's no need to worry with the 2-year Raise Your Rate CD from Ally Bank. If rates go up, you have the opportunity of a one-time rate increase. And with an interest rate that's among the most competitive in the country, there's never been a better time to give us a try. Open an account today. Call us at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
Why do we rely on just investing when there's another way? A way to measure success over a lifetime, not just a single day. Where you don't chase what's hot, you do what's right. And where there's one rule, the golden rule. We call it vanguarding. Vanguarding is a behavior, a philosophy, a call to action. So ask yourself, are you just investing or are you vanguarding? Learn more at Vanguard.com or call us at 888-VANGUARD. All investments are subject to risk.
Scientist David Matotsky of Berlin's Free University can turn the steering wheel of his car with just eye movements. He developed software called iDriver, and he's driving it around Berlin just by looking in different directions. iDriver lets you drive the car up to 31 miles an hour. It remains unclear whether this will be commercialized. This is the bad idea of the week.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Coach Lynn, and you know what? Moms and lovers of moms and those who don't understand moms, we're talking about the real Mother's Day, not with the candy. So tune in this Saturday right here as moms talk about what it's really like to be a mom. So tune in right here at 1500 AM and 820 AM, Saturday from 11 to 12. Prosper.
Here's Brian Klopak, Director of Research, Government Business Council, on Virtually There, the federal view of virtualization, present and future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle.
It's most interesting in that out of the 11, the top six concerns were human concerns. They were cultural concerns. They weren't the technical issues. So it wasn't, we don't have the network capability, we have these various limitations. It was leadership. It was funding. It was cultural resistance to change. They weren't technical issues. They were the human concerns.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Data center consolidation, it's the mandate of the day. And across federal agencies, IT managers are under mounting pressure to arrive at a workable solution, to save costs, to boost efficiencies. We can help you map a path to greater control with a consolidation solution from GTSI and Oracle. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet, and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. and that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The American Council for Technology is celebrating 30 years of collaboration between government and industry. The upcoming Management of Change Conference features speakers, workshops, best practices, and networking opportunities, all focusing on the government's IT strategic agenda. Building on the success of the past 30 years of collaboration, this conference is a must-attend for government and industry IT leaders. Mark your calendar for May 23rd through the 25th at the Lowe's Philadelphia Hotel. For more information or to register, go to actgov.org/moc2010. Register today.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And in hour number two of our program, you'll get a little preview of the Management of Change Conference taking place next week. Gary Galloway of the State Department and Mary Souther of Indus will be joining me to talk about some of the topics of discussion at MOC next week. And especially a lot of issues going on with collaboration and government technology is opening up collaborative channels for agencies all over the place, and how some agencies are leveraging them successfully will be one of the things that we cover in hour number two of the program today. This hour, I'm joined by Dale Church, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering in the Pentagon, and recipient of a number of awards in his time in federal service, and a distinguished career in military-related issues. Also, author of the piece, Acquisition Professionals Needed, But They Should Be Qualified. That's on NDIA's website, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. At the core of the conversation that you and I have been having, Mr. Church, I think, is the idea of quality versus quantity when it comes to the acquisition people that are being hired at the Defense Department. And I think this is an issue that every agency is dealing with that's trying to spike up their acquisition workforce, a lot of them trying to do it. This is tough because, as we talked about in the last segment, these people are going to have to come from somewhere. They're not going to grow on trees, as they say. And the idea of the number versus the quality of the people, I wonder if you think that maybe the Pentagon should have said, instead of saying we're going to hire 20,000 people, we're going to hire as many good people as we can find, with maybe the emphasis being on the fact that they want good people who are equipped to become contracting professionals, acquisition professionals, instead of just the raw number.
It is critical. Quality is critical. And quantity is interesting numbers, but it doesn't really solve the problem. Matter of fact, it can create exactly the opposite. You put a lot of unqualified people in very critical roles, and you're going to have a disaster of the nth proportion. So let me applaud the president and OPM for having at least attacked in part the hiring process. It's been archaic, to say the least, and has created a great amount of delay in getting people hired. The other problem is that the system is, even with those adjustments, still has a major problem, and that is the hiring manager really needs to see the best people come before him, their resumes. They now have to go through an HR process where the veterans' preference, and let me make it clear, I don't have anything against veterans. I applaud their service. They've sacrificed beyond belief for the rest of us. So nothing against them. It just doesn't qualify them to be acquisition professionals. And I put the emphasis on that last word, professionals.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take an Air Force pilot flying F-22s, which is an incredibly complex airplane, and put him into the base hospital and make him a brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that with military people with veterans preferences, or even those that are serving that have been nothing but warriors that are suddenly thrust into an acquisition role. So the really key is that we got to think of this world of how we're going to solve this problem as a world of professionals. And to do that, we have to have a hiring process that ferrets out the list for the hiring manager of the very best qualified people. So he has, say, the top three. Right now, if he gets a list, chances are all he will see in a top 10, which is typically what's presented to him, which is then cut down to the top three to interview, he will only see people with veterans preference.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, nothing against them. It doesn't disqualify them to do this work, but it doesn't qualify them either. As a consequence, he seldom sees the really best qualified people who have even applied for that particular position.
Yeah.
So we have to start with that process. We have to break that down so that he's presented with the best qualified people the system can ferret out. They may be coming from industry. They may be coming from university. They may be coming from another place in the government. But, you know, but they got to be thought of as acquisition professionals. And they're not going to achieve that status until they have 5 to 7 years experience. Only at that time, then we can put them into the right roles.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, so think about it in terms of getting the best number of the best qualified people you can possibly find.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that the government salaries are now fairly competitive, particularly at the lower levels with industry, so that there can be hiring right out of university with engineers and scientists who really would be good at some of these roles of looking at the technologies and trying to decide what the best technologies are that are available out there, as we were talking about earlier, commercially, and then looking at what could be brought into maturity to be added to that system. And then, financial experts who can look at, the cost estimates and say, well, yeah, but that's really way over optimistic. If you're going to take, that amount of, adjustment to, say, even a commercial system, it's going to require that much more money, which is twice of what you're saying it is. And all we're going to do is run into a huge problem down the road. And the other thing is, Francis, I'm looking at 2012, and I see 2012 coming up as a year of the squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the budgets pretty much are set through 2011. But as the war hopefully winds down in certainly in Iraq and hopefully Afghanistan, there is going to be a squeeze on these budgets. People are going to be looking for, quote unquote, the peace dividend. And to get it, you're going to have people who really understand where the dollars are going and how to cut them and how to reduce redundancy.
I want to ask you to hold your thoughts on the 2012 budget squeeze, because that's definitely a concept I want to pursue, and I'm up against a break. But before we go to that, I just want to quote one more line from your piece, which I think is instructive and I did not know. The prior service candidates can circumvent the acquisition certification requirements by using a caveat that they complete the necessary coursework for certification eligibility in 18 to 24 months. Their training is often incomplete or not completed in a timely fashion. There are far too few openings at DAU courses to accommodate this demand for certification eligibility, resulting in personnel serving in important jobs without the necessary skills and training. That's obviously going to require resources, and maybe this does tie better into what we're about to talk about after the break about the coming budget squeeze that you see. But do you think Congress has the stomach to invest here rather than some of the other places they want to spend money?
They better, because it's going to cost them dearly if they don't. When you can be a level 3 program manager in the system and not even have a college degree, let alone any acquisition training, by this waiver that you just talked about, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're probably managing, tens of millions, and in some case, hundreds of millions of dollars that are involved in this sort of thing. And you've got to have the skills necessary to do that. And, this is just wrong. We've got to change that requirement. Now, as you point out, or as I did, too, that the slots that are available to train these people are not going to get you 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even going to get you 2,000
Yeah. My guest is Dale Church, former Pentagon official in the acquisition field, and my guest for the hour on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll talk about the potential budget changes that Defense Secretary Gates has been discussing recently, and the general economic conditions seem to be dictating, and how that might affect the acquisition workforce. We'll do that conversation with Mr. Church when we continue on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Are you a health IT decision maker from government or industry? Then the HIMSS Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition is your can't-miss event. History is being made as dramatic changes and resources are making health information accessible to all, and this is your chance to be a part of it. The theme, Innovation 2010, on the threshold of meaningful use, gives you a front-row seat to the future of nationwide health information exchange. Meet government and industry decision-makers shaping the future. Learn new strategies for connecting the health community. Get practical solutions for your toughest challenges. Be informed. Be inspired. Be there at the HIMSS Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 15th and 16th at the Ronald Reagan Building. Go to govhealthitconference.com for more info. Again, that's govhealthitconference.com, where innovation meets meaningful use.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
Insiders say the number of multiple award contracts is out of control. Why do so many vehicles offer the same exact services? Vendors say it's wasteful. Agencies say it's confusing. The administration wants to reduce costs through contracting, so what is OFPP doing about it? Join me, Jason Miller, tomorrow morning at 7:08 for my special report, Contract Overload. I got answers from OFPP, the Federal Acquisition Service, Congress, and industry experts. Contract Overload, tomorrow morning at 7:08 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on the first hour of the program today is Dale Church, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering at DOD and recipient of the Defense Distinguished Service Medal from the Secretary of Defense for his service at DOD. Also awarded the rank of Meritorious Executive in the Senior Executive Service for his tenure in government. And I appreciate the time that you're spending with us to talk about these issues today, Mr. Church. One of the things that we touched on before the break is this idea of the budget squeeze. You said accurately the budget's pretty much what we see is what we're going to get at some point for 2011. 2012 is a different story, and all across government agencies are kind of bracing for what will be coming in 2012. And we had the speech by Secretary Gates at the Eisenhower Library last week that I played on this program. That speech, by the way, available at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. I've got the video posted there, courtesy of the Pentagon Channel, if you'd like to go back and take a look at that speech. But essentially, he said, we need to find $10 billion, and the number has gotten bigger since then. That's a lot of dough, and it's got to come from somewhere. And my experience observing government, unfortunately, is that a lot of times the first place to be cut is the exactly the thing that you've been talking about in this piece that we've been discussing and also in our conversation today, and that's training and support for developing professional corps of all kinds, not just acquisition. What do the agencies need to do to make sure that that's not where Congress decides they need to cut as we move forward?
Unfortunately, Congress really doesn't have much latitude places to cut. I mean, you start with the entitlement accounts, which are growing very rapidly. They're not being contained. So you start with that problem, and now the discretionary accounts become into the squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
And now you say, all right, within that, we still have all these personnel costs. And, you know, there's been a battle going on with the Congress and the Secretary over whether or not we should raise personnel costs some more. And the personnel costs are already eating up a tremendous portion of the defense budget. So now we're down to really a small fraction of the, not a small fraction, but, you know, less than half of the defense budget is now down to this piece, which we've now got to manage in a way that it's the most effective, efficient we possibly can,
mm-hmm.
with a staff which is not as professional as we should like it, with the danger of simply staffing up with numbers instead of quality. And that's not going to solve the problem. That's only going to exacerbate it. So what we've got to do is we've got to really look through that system. You know, the services have done a pretty good job of the word joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the way they're now fighting on the battlefield, there's a lot of joint going on. Well, we got to do a lot more joint with respect to the way we handle the whole acquisition arena, both with respect to between the services as well within the service. So, you know, things that, you know, are unnecessarily different, but say between the Marine Corps and the Army,
mm-hmm.
buying the same things. Example, a drop test on a particular munitions may be 23 feet for the Marine Corps and 21.5 feet for the Army, with, you know, really no really difference in the way that these things are handled.
Right.
These sorts of things have got to be reconciled.
But that's going to involve somebody somewhere giving up some autonomy and giving up some turf and saying, I'm going to do this for the good of the organization and the good of the taxpayer. Who is sending his and or her money to Washington to support all this. And that's not easily done, as you well know.
It really has to start with Ash Carter in the Undersecretary's Office for Acquisition, and then with Shea Assad and the people under him. The services are not going to do this voluntarily, go over to the Marine Corps and say, let's agree on 22 feet as being the right number
uh-huh.
here. But right now it's tested at both, and so it's cost, you know, double the amount of that we should pay for that test. But
yeah.
it's going to take some top-down kind of work. I'm very impressed with the work done so far by Secretary O'Neill in the Army. I think that he comes to that particular job at a time which is a really good, with his experience, is really quite valuable in terms of, because he's worked with jointness and this sort of thing and within, between the various services. So, you know, we've got to do that. And then within the services, say within the Army, you have all these commands. You can't have a band for each command. You can't have a historian for each command. You can't have an HR department for each. A lot of these things are going to have to be combined together. There's a lot of internal to the building things
mm-hmm.
and internal to the services. They're going to have to look under every rock and see if there's a dollar or two under there because, you know, there's just so few dollars that are left in the discretionary accounts. Every one of them is going to have to be examined.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it's going to take a lot of really quality people, you know, focused and looking at this. And as I say, Secretary Gates is setting the right tone, without question.
Secretary Gates' comment was that overhead is essentially what he believes is killing the Pentagon budget. The story that I have posted up at federalnewsradio.com says the bureaucratic machinery that he refers to chews up, he believes, about 40% of the Pentagon budget, this overhead, and he included the hierarchy of flag officers, the generals and admirals who run the military services. That won't go over real big when some of these changes are proposed by Secretary Gates.
It can be done. It just requires a commitment and a dedication of part of the professionals to do that. Without patting myself on the back, when I came to my office, I had 151 professionals. When I left, there was 58. And it was far, far more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came in there, my military assistant was rated as an 08, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is a two-star general.
Yeah.
I reduced it to an 06.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing, and they said a lot of this within the civil service system couldn't be done. It can be done.
Mm-hmm.
I know it can be done. But it requires time, effort, and commitment. And you've got to be willing to stay in place. You can't be just going in as a political appointee for 2 years and just have a good time. You got to go in with a dedication to really changing the system. And I think that there are people out there who are willing to do that. We just have to identify them and get them in place. And certainly Secretary Gates recognizes those kind of people and their contribution.
And a lot of people speculated when he was retained by President Obama that that was his mindset for staying on, too, is that he understood that this was a walk-the-walk moment instead of a just this is what needs to be done and I'll let somebody else do it. My guest for the hour is Dale Church, Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering at the Defense Department from 1977 to 1980, and since then continuing to follow issues at the Pentagon and be involved with defense issues. Information about him and information about the piece that he's written titled Acquisition Professionals Needed, But They Should Be Qualified, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Improvised explosive devices pose a significant threat to U.S. warfighters. ITT is at the forefront of this battle, delivering technologies that help our troops stay ahead of these emerging threats. Through advanced information networks, data sharing, signal jamming, and other innovative technologies, ITT provides critical solutions to enable our troops to complete their missions and come home safely. That's just part of the innovation happening at ITT. ITT Defense and Information Solutions, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355. Or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
Your Army Computing Refresh calls for someone who knows the terrain. As a trusted supplier to the U.S. Army for over six decades, Hewlett-Packard is a name you can count on. HP offers a broad range of desktops, notebooks, and workstations at special ADMC2 prices. And they include efficiency features, like the all-new 2010 Intel Core i5 processor with Intel Turbo Boost technology. See the full range of solutions now at hp.com/HP for Army.
I'm here for the matchmaking service.
But you're a sandwich.
See, how can I fall in love when people think I'm something I'm not?
So you're not a chicken sandwich?
No, I'm a new premium chicken tortata from Taco Bell.
Okay, tell me about the real you.
Well, I'm loaded with fire-grilled chicken and bold flavors with no boring bun to get in the way.
Huh, well, with all your delicious ingredients, I think we can find you someone who loves you for what's on the inside.
Hey, let's not forget about what's on the outside.
With no boring bun, the outside is pretty important, too.
Introducing Taco Bell's new premium chicken tortata. Marinated and fire-grilled all-white meat chicken in your choice of two bold flavors, bacon ranch or salsa roja. Think outside the bun. At participating locations for a limited time only.
Put away your late-night hunger with Taco Bell's fourth meal. All the crunchy, spicy, cheesy, and grilled tastes you crave after dark. Only at Taco Bell. Think outside the bun. Taco Bell is open till 1 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Isn't it time for a government technology event that gives you 21st century IT solutions? Join us at Gov2O Expo, May 25th through May 27th at the Washington Convention Center for 3 days of incisive keynote speakers, in-depth training sessions, and networking with the brightest minds in the government IT sector. Gov2O Expo, the training event for the future of government computing. Expo hall passes are free for all government employees. Register today at gov2expo.com.
Back to wrap up on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My conversation with Dale Church, who is a former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and who is author of the piece, Acquisition Professionals Needed, but They Should Be Qualified in the National Defense, and it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com. I commend it to you if you're interested in defense acquisition issues as a thoughtful idea about where we need to go. One thing that I took from the comments that you made at the end of the last segment, we only have a minute or two left, I'm afraid, but you are optimistic that this change can happen and that things can, that this ship, so to speak, can be righted and we can be headed in the right direction.
I was most pleased, as I said, with the president and OPM coming out with some directives to cut some of the red tape. It needs to be cut about the same amount as they already cut it. I'm very impressed with Secretary Gates and his objectives on it. You know, his team has got to get behind him and really produce. And as I say, these pronouncements of numbers aren't going to solve the problem. They're really going to have to delve into the system and really, you know, change the rules so they can hire the right people, train the right people, and give them the necessary experience so they can operate as acquisition professionals. And you don't do that overnight.
Mm-hmm. If we look at a timeline, where we should be in a year or where we should be in 5 years, just real briefly, where do you think we should be at some of these points in the future?
The first thing I would do is figure out where my training is going to come from. DAU is not adequate in terms of the quality of the output.
Mm-hmm.
Quantity of the output. Sorry. There are the universities like George Washington University has an outstanding master's program in government contracting and this mm-hmm. sort of thing. There are other universities as well. So I really think we need to put together a consortium of universities to really focus on this particular problem. They do need places for their students to go get a job once they graduate. Here's an opportunity. I don't know where else you're going to get it from. The services can do some of it. And as I say, it may be worthwhile to hire some of the younger people, particular science and engineers, which are hard to come by, and do some relatively mundane things with them and wear in a sort of warehousing, but give them a salary, get them on board, and get them into the system. So that's another idea.
There is a lot more that I would love to cover, and we're completely out of time. So I would love to extend an invitation to have you come back in the future and talk some more about these issues, especially as developments come out of Congress or the Pentagon. It's great to have you in studio. Dale Church, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering at DOD, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can read his piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's linked up there. We'll take you right to the National Defense website. And we're back for hour number two of the program in just a bit on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.